From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Judy Campbell, filling in for Dave Iverson. In her late 30s, Sarah Elizabeth Richards had several surgeries, injected herself with hormones, and spent $50,000 in the process. She wasn't sick or at risk of being sick. She was hoping to freeze her biological clock by freezing her eggs so she could have a baby before her fertility faded. At 42, she's yet to defrost the eggs, but she says this baby insurance, as she calls it, is the best investment she's ever made. The promise and perils of egg freezing on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, in today for Dave Iverson. In her early 30s, Sarah Elizabeth Richards was in a decent 8-year relationship. She knew she wasn't happy, but she wasn't miserable. And though she knew they didn't have a future, it wasn't the future yet, and she wasn't in any hurry to dive into an awful breakup. But then what she calls a terrifying book came out. Sylvia Ann Jewlett's Creating a Life informed her that fertility dramatically drops off at 35, plummets before 40, and if career women like Richards didn't get serious about starting families soon, they'd be flocking to fertility clinics to try to, this is Jewlett's quote, snatch a child from the jaws of menopause. With that, Richards became a clock ticker, her limitless future replaced by the bounds of her cliched biological clock. She was in good company. 1 in 5 women was waiting to start a family until after 35, an 8-fold increase since the 70s. And Richards was reaching that age at a pivotal time when scientists were just starting to have success with freezing eggs, taking a woman's healthy eggs and freezing them until she felt ready to use them. The hope of egg freezing is that women can free themselves from biology to set their own clock. As New York Times writer Gina Collada said in the early days of the science, egg freezing would make menopause obsolete. Now, a decade into egg freezing and half a year after the American Society for Reproductive Medicine removed the procedure's experimental label, about 5,000 women have had their eggs frozen. How much does this very expensive procedure improve their chances of having a baby from their own egg? What do they risk? What will the extra time buy them? And what does it mean for society? Joining us to discuss these questions are Sarah Elizabeth Richards. She's a journalist and author of Motherhood Rescheduled, The New Frontier of Egg Freezing and the Women Who Tried It. She joins us from the studios of the Radio Foundation in New York. Hi.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining. And Dr. Marcel Seeders is professor and director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at UCSF. Thanks for joining.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Sarah Elizabeth Richards, your book profiled 3 women and yourself who decided to freeze their eggs. And some of the women sat with the idea for a long time before deciding to do it. Tell me how you made the decision. What convinced you to do it?
Well, I've always known I wanted kids. And as you said, I got out of this long relationship and I had, you know, been dating a while. And then I met someone and he wasn't quite sure he wanted kids. And if he did, he wasn't going to want them in the near future. So I was sort of faced with this big dilemma. And then when I learned about egg freezing, it's such an enticing idea that I went to a seminar and learned a little more about it. But
and this is the early days. This is before there was a lot proven and before there was a lot of success, right?
It became available in the U.S. just in 2002, a little more available in 2004, and I was thinking about it in 2005. So you're right. It was still early days, and it was right before that new technology had become widely available.
Right. So I'm sorry. What convinced you?
Just, you know, that it would take that pressure off and that, you know, would still give me a chance. I, you know, it's always one of these moments where women do this, they call it baby math. And I remember I was sitting in a Starbucks on the day of my 36th birthday and I like had pulled out a little back of a business card and I was like, okay, if I have a baby by this date, you know, then maybe I can have a second by this date. And even I realized even if I had a first baby in time, then I still might be, you know, it might be harder to have a second. So that sort of convinced me that even if I didn't use it for a first baby, it still would come in handy possibly for a second.
That's something that runs through this book a lot at various points in these women's stories. everybody's sort of doing that cocktail napkin calculation of 39, and then I have to give myself a year to get over the breakup and meet somebody new. And so it's
and
a
you don't factor in all of those things, you know, right?
Right, right. So
like,
you,
oh, I want to lose 10 pounds, and I want to learn relationship skills. And well, what if this guy doesn't work out? And you know, you don't think that you're gonna have time or trouble getting pregnant. So it's just like this very weird sense of all these variables that could happen, but you'd no idea how they're going to line up, and you have no idea how it's all going to map out.
Well, tell us what you did, because you took – I think you might have said in the book that you actually got a little obsessive about collecting eggs. You ended up with 70, which seems like a lot. Talk about the process you went through over the years.
Sure. Well, so I froze my first batch right before my 36th birthday. I'm sorry. I was 36 when I started my first – when I did my first batch. And I'd gotten about 6 eggs. And I was – when I had come out of the recovery room, you just feel this instant relief. And you this pressure that's been on you for years, you just like it clears and you feel really great about yourself. And you feel like, you know, you've sort of turned the story in your life from something that was closing and sad and maybe even a little desperate to – feeling hopeful again. But so I felt really great about it. But then, you know, after a few weeks of this sort of victory dance, I started to think, you know, that's actually not that many. Maybe if I'm lucky, that's a couple embryos to transfer back to my uterus. And so then I started to think, well, how can I get more eggs? Because if I really want a safety net, then I need to find a way to get more. And it's weird. I feel like there's nothing else in life that can be is put so starkly before you. I mean, it's literally like you find the money to buy these eggs and you're going to protect your chance to have a child. And it's hard to – I don't know. It's hard to ignore that starkness of it. And you start to think, well, what else is worth that? You know, I don't care that much about a wedding. I don't care that much about a car. And it's like you feel like you have a few years to sort of frantically put these eggs away to guarantee yourself that, which is obviously really, really – you know it's been important throughout your whole life, but suddenly when you're faced with that dilemma, it becomes super, super important.
Well, talk about – yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's okay. Yeah, so I was really fortunate because I had some savings, and then my parents were able to help me a little bit. And then because I was researching this book, I found other ways to freeze them that weren't as expensive. For example, I went to Canada where there was one of the world pioneers who had started this better technology at the time. And so I froze them there. And then also there was another doctor I found in New York who had done a different kind of procedure called minimal stimulation, where you don't take quite as many hormone shots and you freeze them in like fewer batches, but it's a lot cheaper. So through all of those, I was able to put away 70 eggs.
And you spent through, I think, it's the storage costs, it's the procedure and drugs, you spent $50,000. Break down the money for us, because not everybody, I don't think the other people you profiled spent as much. What are we talking about for one procedure?
So the conventional cycles where, you know, you take the 2 weeks of hormone shots, and that's your best chance for getting the most amount of eggs, cost anywhere between $9,000 and $13,000 a cycle. Some clinics will give you a discount if you do a second cycle through them. Then you've got the cost of the hormone drugs, which can cost a couple thousand dollars more. I found a way to buy them online. I found Spanish fertility drugs, and I bought them through an online British pharmacy. So that saved me some money. But then you've got the storage cost. You know, that's how it breaks down. But the main cost is the rounds itself.
You profiled three other women other than yourself that went through this, and you talked about the immense sense of relief that you got when you did this. Tell me what happened in your life after. What did this – you're a real advocate for freezing your eggs because you think that it changes the way women approach their lives and their dating and thinking about kids. How did it change your approach and the other women?
Well, before you freeze, there's the sense that somehow your life's not going the way you had anticipated it to go. So you feel a lot of sadness about it. You feel a lot of frustration because, you know, depending, maybe you're not with the right guy, or you're trying to meet the right guy, or you're trying to make this relationship go in a certain direction, and it's not happening. And so you're frustrated. There's also a sense of grief because you're starting to get in touch with the reality that maybe motherhood might not happen for you, or at least biological motherhood. you know, you see kids on the street, you play with your niece and nephew, and instead of thinking, oh, this is really fun, you just think, oh my God, I might not have this. So somehow when you actually put those eggs in the freezer, it shifts it in your head. It's like you're back in the game again. You feel this, the morning stops and you feel like you're, you almost feel like you're normal again. Like you have potential in that, you know, everything is, the future is wide open again. I think also there, you feel like you're taking charge of your life and taking control of your fertility again. So I think that just, you feel proud of yourself for putting the eggs away. You feel more confident. You feel more relaxed. And I think that helps you a lot in your dating. Actually, it kind of carries over in every part of your life.
And how long did you, how many years did you think that you were buying yourself? Right now, you're 42. You still have not unfrozen your eggs. So what's the plan?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because when you think about it, it doesn't really buy you that much time. So I froze mine between 36 and 38. I'm 42 now. I've been dating someone about 9 months. And I could see, you know, if we didn't have a child naturally in the next year, freezing them by 44, 45. So, you know, let's say if the woman, average woman, freezes her eggs at 36 and maybe she has a deadline in her head of thawing them at 45, and you're talking 10 years. Which actually a lot can happen in 10 years, but it's not, you know, you're not buying yourself decades of time.
Right. And so you just said for you, it made you relaxed. It made you proactive. What about the other women you followed? Did they have different reactions?
You know, that was the theme throughout, is that they felt proud of themselves. I remember one woman, she had put her whole bill on a credit card. And I said, well, gosh, what was it like paying that off every month? You know, that's $300 you're not spending for something else. And she said, it actually just made me feel proud. Like it was a reminder of like the good decision I had made. You know, I felt like maybe she wasn't being serious about, you know, she was in a bad marriage and she wasn't serious about ending the marriage. And she felt kind of like maybe she hadn't steered her life in the way she thought she should have and felt a little bad about it. But all of a sudden, like, this was an action she could take, and it made her feel really good.
You said in your book that society is getting more comfortable with the idea of 40-somethings extending their fertility. This is something that will affect you with eggs in the bank, that you would be having babies later. But we are still struggling with the concept of egg freezing, and that society is not entirely sympathetic to egg freezing. Why is that? What did you see that wasn't sympathetic?
Well, there's two things. One, there's a worry that women are going to, you know, even if you can stop your biological clock, that you're not going to pay attention to your aging clock and that you're going to push motherhood. Because, you know, you could actually freeze your eggs and have them put back in your uterus. You can carry a baby actually through middle age. So you could have these put back in you at 50, 55. So I think there's a worry that women would do that. The women in my book, you know, by the time they hit their mid-40s, were pretty aware that they needed to do it now, that it wouldn't be fair to a baby, that it was going to be much harder. So that didn't prove true, that women were really going to push the boundaries on how late they could carry. And then the other thing, I don't know, there's some people that think it's sort of an entitled thing, like maybe women, you know, didn't do the things they thought that they should have done throughout their lives. And now, you know, they can find money and, you know, almost change this biological law that everyone else has to follow. Almost like they were these immature women, like drinking mango teenies at cocktails or going on all these, you know, selfish jobs and, you know, while everyone else had to raise children when they were supposed to. And so maybe there's a little bit of that where, you know, it's like, well, these are just entitled women and they think they can just buy themselves out of a problem.
We're discussing the benefits and risks of freezing eggs, the hefty price tag, and what it means for women to delay motherhood. Our guests are Sarah Elizabeth Richards, journalist and author of Motherhood Rescheduled, and Marcel Seeters, professor and director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at UCSF. And we'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Dr. Marcel Seeters, tell me, when somebody comes in, a patient comes in and they're interested in freezing their eggs. What's the conversation you have with them?
Well, I think it's an important conversation to have. We do talk about what happens to the ovary and to eggs as women age. And there's really two factors going on. One is a decline in quantity. And you can see from what Sarah said, even the first time she froze, they got 6 eggs. And you would anticipate with someone younger or actually even with some other 36-year-olds, you might get more eggs than that. But the other factor that's probably even more critical is the decline in quantity with age, so that as women get older, there's an increased genetic risk in the eggs, so the eggs become less healthy, less likely to implant, more likely to miscarry. And so age is a critical factor in terms of the genetic health of the eggs for women. And so I think first we just need to talk about, you know, why this might be an option that they would consider. And then the other thing that I think is important, and perhaps it's different if you have 70 eggs in the freezer, but I think most women won't do that. And so I think they need to look at egg freezing as a potential, but not a guarantee. And I think it's important for women to understand that, that what you're offering them is a potential, but there isn't a baby in the freezer.
Well, how successful are these procedures?
Well, I mean, particularly for younger women, for women under 30, it appears that the success rate with fresh eggs and with frozen eggs are very similar. But even with fresh eggs, there's a high loss rate from the egg that you get out of the ovary and the embryo that you actually put back. And so if you have an embryo in a cycle, you know what you have. If you have an egg, for a woman, you really have to think about how many eggs do I need to freeze and what's the chance of success per egg. And depending on the age, that success rate may vary from as low as 3-4% per egg up to perhaps 10-12% per egg. And so you need to think about how many eggs do I need and how old am I now, because that's the age the eggs are, to give myself not a guarantee but a high enough chance and likelihood that this is an appropriate thing for me to do.
The younger a woman takes the eggs, freezes the eggs, the higher the chances that it'll be successful, but also the higher the chances that she doesn't need to freeze her eggs. So it must be a hard decision. When do you see people? At what age do people come in? What ages do you recommend that they do this? And what age is the cutoff?
Well, I think you bring up an incredibly good point, and it's something that I struggle with a little bit. So you're absolutely right. The younger a woman freezes her eggs, the higher her chances of success, but also the less likely she is to actually use them. What we see most frequently these days are women in their late 30s and sometimes even early 40s who come in and want to freeze. Those are, unfortunately, the women who are most likely to need them, and they're going to have the lowest success rates. And so I struggle a little bit with how, you know, obviously the person who comes in at a later age is more likely to use them, but their success rate's going to be lower. So there's a lot of counseling in terms of what the success rate is and how many cycles they might need to do and whether that's something that makes sense and feels comfortable to them.
Let's take a call. Kim in Alameda.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am a physician and I am a subspecialist, and I did not complete my training until I was 33, so I didn't really begin my hunt for pursuing my family until after that. And I'm currently actually going through a divorce for sort of marrying the wrong man who I married in desperation to have children. If this had been an option for me at the time, it's certainly something I would have pursued. And I have to make sure that people understand that people in my situation, where it does take a very, very long time to get through a career like the one I chose, you know, this ability to delay fertility is actually, or to extend fertility is actually a really important option for us.
Thanks for your call, Sarah Elizabeth Richards. This is the story you've been hearing.
Yes, for sure. I think we all have friends who panicked in their mid-30s and did marry the wrong guy. And maybe they have kids, but they're not that happy. And so at least the women in my book, one had recently gone through a divorce. Another had broken off an engagement. Another woman was 38 and she had broken up with someone she'd been dating just a few months. But she'd never had a boyfriend. And so she just had this fear that nothing was ever going to come together for her. So I think in those situations, you know, it did give them time to sort out their love lives and to find a partner and a husband and a father for their kids. It was a big opportunity for them.
Dr. Marcel Seeters, do you think people overly rely on this technology, that there's a false promise that they can delay? Do you think maybe people should be using it more as a last resort? How do you see people? How do you think people should fit it in their lives?
I think the issue of using it as a last resort is when people get into trouble because they're older when they come in, and so their success rates are lower. I think the issue of freezing earlier, potentially for the woman who called in who's a physician and knew she was going to have a long career with medical school and residency and fellowship, if you freeze earlier, your chances for success are higher. And that was one thing from Sarah's recent article that made a little bit of sense to me is it's always bothered me at some level that a lot of women who froze wouldn't ever use their embryos, and so what was I really offering them? But if it offers them that sense of somewhat of protection, then there may be value in doing that. But I do think that women need to look at it in the full spectrum and recognize that for most women who are going to have maybe 10, maybe 20 eggs, that it's not a baby in the bank. It's a potential to have a baby. And so that may free you up and give you a sense of security through a part of your life that would otherwise be stressful to you and be concerning to you about the biological clock. But I'm not sure that it's going to be the answer for everyone. And as was brought up earlier, there's sort of the social justice issues of, you know, that this isn't a technology that can be applied equally across society.
It is a very small, not a lot of people have the money to spend on a procedure that is not needed for their health.
Right. And one of the things I want to bring up that was interesting is that even for the cases in my book where egg freezing did not work, I mean, there were some women where they thawed their eggs and they didn't get a baby out of it, is that they ended up finding other ways to be mothers. Some used, one used donor eggs, frozen donor eggs. And so that I was curious to see what would happen. You know, if your worst nightmare comes true and you spent this money and the eggs don't end up working, what would happen to you? And, you know, it was nice to see that they did find other options.
Right. Although they could have made that decision earlier. But this is about women who have decided that they want to take extra measures to use their own egg. We'll continue our conversation about the benefits and risks of freezing eggs after a short break. If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. And you can email your questions to forum@kqed.org. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, in today for Dave Iverson. We're discussing the benefits and risks of freezing eggs, and joining us is Sarah Elizabeth Richards, author of Motherhood Rescheduled, The New Frontier of Egg Freezing and the Women Who Tried It, and Dr. Marcel Seeters, professor and director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at UCSF. And Marcel Seeters, can you give us a sense of how prevalent this is now? How many babies are being born from this procedure? And how has it changed? You've been here since the beginning, and it's been 10 years now in the science of this. How have we seen it change?
So I think that egg freezing initially was done for women who had a diagnosis of cancer and were undergoing or about to undergo treatment with chemotherapy or radiation, something that would affect their future fertility. And now that cancer survival rates are higher, issues of quality of life become important. And so for many years, we froze primarily on patients with a medical indication. I think what's changed is both the technology, most importantly, so that the success rates are higher because of a change in the specific technique that we utilize for freezing, and then I think an awareness of this as an option. I think it's still a relatively small number of the population. Having been someone who grew up in the 50s and 60s and sort of on the coattails of the feminine movement, I think that it does, in some sense, attempt to level the playing field so that women have somewhat less pressure as they pursue their careers. But I don't see it as something that's going to be completely widespread. I still think it's going to potentially, I think it will grow. I think it will continue to grow. But I think that it's not going to be as widespread, perhaps, as people believe.
Brooke joins us from San Jose.
Hi, Brooke. Hi. Hi. Thank you so much for the subject. It's amazing to hear you guys talk about it. So it took me 3 years to get pregnant with my first. And in those 3 years of trying, we called it the sweatshop years, I actually considered freezing my eggs, but I wasn't sure how long it would take for my system to basically come back online. And I'm wondering, after you, I don't know if harvest is the right term, the eggs, can you get pregnant very easily afterwards, or does it take time for things to kind of settle down?
So, Marcel Cedars.
Sure. So the ovaries actually respond and return to normal very quickly. The medications we use to stimulate the ovaries to retrieve the eggs have very short, what we call half-life. They leave your body very quickly. And so you'll get a period about 10 to 12 days after the egg retrieval. And some women, that very first cycle will be normal, but certainly by the second cycle after that, the cycles are back to what your normal is.
Thanks for your call, Brooke. And we go to Mary in San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say I had a very negative experience with egg freezing. It wasn't successful in terms of getting any reasonable number of eggs, and I had really very negative.
How old were you when you did it?
34.
Okay. Go ahead, sorry.
Had really very negative physical consequences from it, you know, affecting muscles not at all involved in reproduction and very painful. And I just was listening to the first half of the show and just felt that it painted far too rosy of a picture and talked about giving people this kind of security when, to me, first of all, based on the, you know, percent likelihood of success, if you even have a successful procedure, which is not everyone, and you pay, you know, regardless, and you pay in physical ways in addition to financial, you know, it seems to me a false sense of security.
Mary, tell me, what happened? Did you ever go to use those eggs?
You know, didn't get enough to use, and no, I haven't, because when you hear, I guess it's up to 3 or 4% per egg now. You know, if you barely get any, it's not enough to do anything with. I haven't destroyed the one that they got, and it continues to be in storage, but that's where things sit now.
Dr. Marcel Cedars, first, this muscular reaction that she had to drugs, is this, can you talk about that?
So it doesn't sound like that's a typical reaction. Certainly the medications that women use do have side effects. Most of them are during the stimulation process. The ovaries grow. You make more of the hormone estradiol during the process, so women feel very full and bloated. Some women get some headaches or nausea. But most of the time there isn't, I'm not completely sure what she's describing as this muscular symptom, but that's not a typical side effect that patients report.
Well, let's get to this other question. She raises a very important question that it is a lot, well, it's a lot of money. It's a health, you're pumping yourself with hormones, you're going through surgery, you're going through a lot for something that the chances aren't, maybe not as high as you'd like them to be. Sarah Elizabeth Richards?
Can I ask the doctor a little bit about how they measure success rates? Because I know there's a bit of a controversy in whether you measure success rates per egg or per cycle. I'd always understood it. Let's say if you get a few embryos and you transfer those embryos, that's per try, and that could be anywhere from 20 to 50% success rate per try. Why are you looking at it per egg?
Well, because...
Because it always makes it seem so low. Even in IVF, it seems really
exactly.
low. But when you look at it per try, it's a little different.
Right. And that's a little bit of the problem, even looking at the literature that's published, is it's not mm-hmm. always clear what the denominator of that equation is. And the reason I use per egg is that I want women to be very realistic about what they're doing, not to discourage them or encourage them, but... When you go through a cycle for one woman might be 4 eggs, and a cycle for another woman might be 24 eggs. The success rate for those two women per cycle is going to be very different. And that's why I think the per egg number makes more sense, because when you freeze, all you have is an egg. You have an egg, and you know how many eggs you have, and so you can sort of calculate in your head what your chance is, and then what level of chance makes me feel comfortable, what gives me that sense of reassurance that I was looking for in the first place that brought me into the office. And so I think to do it per cycle, or even what you see a lot of times is per transfer, so you actually get embryos to transfer, but the percentage from getting an egg to getting an embryo, there's a lot of drop-off in that process. And so when I've got a patient and she has 10 eggs, it doesn't help for me to give her a per-transfer rate, because we don't know what it's going to look like by the time she gets to embryos. And so that's why I think the most honest assessment to give women is a per-egg, because when you finish a cycle, you know how many eggs you have.
Let's bring in Diane Tober, medical anthropologist and associate director with the Center for Genetics and Society in Berkeley. Diane, if you heard that last caller, Mary, who had this bad experience wonder if you could comment on this idea that freezing eggs opens up a woman's choices and seeing it as a feminist issue. How do you see that?
Well, as a feminist issue, it's sad that women are feeling compelled to have their eggs extracted and frozen. But really, as a feminist issue, what needs to be addressed is workplace discrepancies. And for example, right now you have this as an option to freeze your eggs, but when does an option become compulsory? For example, I'm at a conference today on reproductive justice in Ann Arbor, and I was just speaking to an attorney, and she was telling me that a number of law firms and other companies are actually offering egg freezing as part of the package for a woman seeking employment in the workplace. And to me, maybe she's offered a choice now, but you know, you have anchors like Diane Sawyer advising her young workers that work for her, women that work for her, to freeze their eggs. And this isn't necessarily something that's going to provide all the answers and level the playing field in the workplace. And you see a lot of women starting to spend a lot of money to extract and freeze their eggs, hoping that they're going to have some sort of reproductive insurance policy, when that just so far has not borne out.
So and perhaps we'll have a workplace that has an expectation that women will delay beyond maybe when it's healthier, but beyond when it's good for their lives, in order to stay competitive in the workplace.
Yeah, and when is a good time to have children if you're a working mom? There's never any time that really is the ideal where you could say, aha, right now is the ideal time. I've got all my ducks in a row. I've got the perfect partner. I've got the house with the picket fence. I've got the perfect job. And I can take a year off to take care of my child. It doesn't happen.
Do you think there's maybe kind of a paradox of choice in some of this, isn't there? That if you delay and you have more time, does that actually give you, does that answer questions for you?
Well, it doesn't. To me, it doesn't solve the problem. The problem is that a lot of women are investing a lot of hope in procedures that don't work. Technologies fail all the time. I've spent years and interviewed scores of women, hundreds of couples and women that have delayed childbearing and tried to seek treatment through infertility. And as Miriam Zoll points out in her book, also, it doesn't always work. Fertility treatments fail, and we have all this faith and this hope in the technological fix that's going to level the playing field and take care of our biological clocks and answer all of our prayers and give us this ideal family. And in fact, many women have been left without children because they've waited too long, because they haven't had their children at the time when they were most able to. And most of the women that I've interviewed really regretted their decisions waiting and wished they'd had children earlier while it was easier to have them rather than waiting on the technologies to fix it for them after the fact.
How do you respond to that, Sarah Elizabeth Richards?
Well, I was thinking, I mean, even if we have a society with, you know, really affordable childcare and, you know, our partners are going to help out with housework and all the things that, you know, we want to accomplish, it's still not going to fix the problem of, you know, maybe you're not with the right partner, or, you know, at least in my book, or the women I talk to, is that they waited because of personal relationship decisions. And so those are hard to fix, I guess, in a bigger context.
And
one of the things that doesn't get a lot of attention is that one of the biggest benefits of egg freezing technology is the ability to freeze donor eggs. So I think that gives women a whole other level of choice if their frozen eggs don't work.
Can I address that?
Is this Dr. Cedars?
Yes.
This is Dr. Tober.
I just wanted to say that in terms of that, that's part of the problem, the delay, and that's the one thing that potentially egg freezing in a younger woman would help. So women expect, society expects, that assisted reproduction can sort of overcome anything. And what it can't overcome is the aging of the egg. And so when a woman delays getting pregnant into her early 40s, her success rates, even with IVF, are much lower because of that increased genetic risk of the eggs. And so that's where potentially, and again, it's not for everyone, but potentially where egg freezing would help, because you'd freeze the eggs at a younger age when each egg was more viable than when you're older.
But if it doesn't work, you still have a chance of using donor eggs. And those success rates are very high, even in your mid-40s, because you're using the eggs of a younger woman.
Well, can I address the donor eggs? This is really
important. Diane Tober. Mm-hmm.
Yes. First of all, women are being sought out at, you know, college campuses, young women that are healthy and being injected with these hormones, Lupron, which is being used off-market, that has caused numerous problems for young women that are giving their eggs, donating their eggs to other couples to provide them with the opportunity to have children. I've spoken to so many egg providers that have had not only complications during the egg harvesting and egg retrieval process and ovarian hyperstimulation, which is now in, for example, the UK, the highest rate of maternal mortality is due to ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, but also women that have been rendered infertile themselves because they've had a reaction to Lupron, which increased flared-up endometriosis to the point where their uteruses would no longer be viable to keep a pregnancy. So the fact that young women are being co-opted into participating for older women to have children through their frozen eggs or through their eggs is not, to me, the appropriate option.
Let's bring in another caller now, Cecilia from Tiburon. Please join us. Hi.
Oh, hi. I wanted to say that I work as a nurse practitioner in neonatal intensive care, and as a result of my work, I care for a lot of babies that are born to mothers of advanced maternal age who have become pregnant by in vitro fertilization. And I would like for the doctors to comment, first of all, on the maternal morbidity that that these moms of advanced maternal age face, like preeclampsia, and also the incidence of birth defects extreme premature birth.
Thanks for the call, Dr. Marcel Cedars.
So I think that there is some increased risk as women get older. What we have seen, however, is certainly up to age 45, the risks are quite small as long as the woman is otherwise healthy. So she's not overweight, she doesn't have underlying high blood pressure, she doesn't have underlying diabetes. the caller's completely right that there is an increased risk of high blood pressure or pleuroeclampsia and diabetes as women get older. But again, at least up to 45, those rates are fairly low, and they do start to increase after that. So I think that that's a valid concern, and the issue of that for the baby is that as the mother gets sicker, the only way to make the mother better is to deliver the baby. That puts the baby at risk for prematurity.
Is there an age that you recommend people to not insert eggs after?
Well, I think each program sets their own internal sort of cutoff, and most of them are in, you know, maybe 50 or the early 50s, kind of the natural age of menopause. But I think that it really depends on the intrinsic health of the mother, because that's where a lot of the risk would come from.
A listener writes, I had my kids in my mid-30s. My two boys are now 6 and 4, and I am almost 41. Raising kids is exhausting. I wonder how much a woman freezing eggs thinks not only about her physical window of opportunity to bear children, but how she will handle the physical, emotional, and psychological tolls that raising kids takes on our internal resources.
Right, right.
Sarah Elizabeth Richards?
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good question. It's always brought up as, you know, oh, you're not going to have any energy when you're this age. And I'm, you know, my best friend from college, her mom had her at 45, and, you know, everything seemed to be fine. She lived a nice long life. I think women who are think that they might have their children older, you know, they know it. They take their vitamins. They do yoga. I think it may be harder, but I think they factor that into their decision. And also, there's two things that are happening. One, I think just even the talk about all of this is going to help more women have their children younger. I know I had a friend who just even talking about egg freezing and thinking about it as an option made her realize that maybe this wasn't a bad time in her life to have children. So maybe overall, egg freezing, just the existence of it, the discussion about it might push women to start their families younger in general. But for those women that can't have them now, maybe they don't want to be single moms, maybe they don't want to risk having a child in their 40s with birth defects, we can lecture them all day and say, well, you should have had your babies early, you should start your family earlier. But if their life isn't in a position where they can do that, this is an option. And I feel like we cross that line so much where, you know, these women feel really ashamed and frustrated, and piling on that pressure isn't helpful to them. It's certainly not going to help them have their families any faster, and it's not going to help them have them in a form that, you know, they want. I want a husband. I want a father for my child. I want to have my babies in my mid-40s with eggs that I froze earlier because I wanted to give them the best health possible.
Dr. Tober,
I just think we need to be careful of that tone.
Right. Dr. Tober, address that. You said that there's never a perfect time to have babies. Do you think that
right.
women should be having it during their natural fertility time?
Well, you know, the choices that I made the choice to have my children when I was in graduate school, when I was about 31. I had been doing interviews with women experiencing infertility that approached 35 and were suffering through the trials of IVF and everything else. And, you know, was it an ideal time? I was a graduate student. I had access to university childcare. I had access to university housing. I had access to time because my schedule was flexible. So to me, 30s and in graduate school is a fine time to have children. Now I'm 51. If I hadn't had children between the time of graduate school, you know, between graduate school and now, there would have been no ideal time as far as once you get on the workplace. And another thing I wanted to address is this issue of relationships. I've interviewed I've interviewed plenty of women who have delayed their relationships. And Sarah, I also read your book and I really enjoyed reading it. But they've had these relationships with male partners that are not quite on the same page as they are regarding their reproduction. And women I've seen have spent a year, 2 years, 3 years hopeful that they'll be able to change the man's mind and get him on the same page of, yeah, it's time to start the family. And in the meantime, they've spent their reproductive years waiting for somebody who's going to come around that actually isn't going to come around. So it's a hard choice to make, but to me it seems much more logical to say, you know, if you're not on the same page as me, if you don't want to have children with me, cut it off early and find somebody who does, rather than waiting for somebody to change their mind when they're probably not going to. And that to me is making an informed reproductive choice. Or have your child on your own if you really know that you want children. It's not that bad of an option. there may be stigmatized.
What about the women who are divorced? I met a woman who, you know, she did all the right things. She married this guy. They were supposed to start their family in her early 30s. And he got arrested because, you know, he turned out to be a sex addict and she got divorced. And then all of a sudden she's 36. And, you know, women don't necessarily do the things. They're not always responsible for things that happen in their lives. And, you know, many find themselves in situations. So, yeah, I mean, we all wish we would make great decisions in our romantic lives, but we're human and that doesn't always happen.
Of course.
You know.
And Sarah Elizabeth Richards, you had the people in your book had a real mixed record with this. One person, I apologize if I'm giving away the end here, but one person did have a baby from their stored eggs, but that's just one out of four. You are the one who has yet to try them. But you still paint – you are an advocate. You paint a rosy picture of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, one woman was successful. Two were not. And those two, one ended up using donor egg, and now she's got a baby and is happy and she's married. And, you know, she feels – she says she doesn't regret that decision, that doing those things put her in a better position in her life where she did date. She got married. She felt – better about herself, and she credits the psychological benefits of egg freezing for helping her to put her in that place where these good things happened in her life. The other person is childless now. Her eggs did not work, but she's in a relationship and they're planning on using donor eggs soon. So they did find ways to be mothers.
Right. And did these women all feel that this sort of expensive, complicated process helped them in that process, or did they hope that maybe they could have come to a different conclusion earlier?
No, I think it felt it's always you want to look back on your decisions in a positive way. That's a human tendency. But I think they felt like it did put them on a better path in their life.
Okay. Let's
And they didn't neither regretted it. Okay. None of them regretted it.
Let's go to some more calls.
I worry about the egg donors, you know.
Right. Elizabeth in Oakland, please join us.
Hi, good morning. 20 years ago, I had an ovary condition, a dermoid cyst on ovaries, and at the time, there was talk about freezing eggs with no technology to implant or the issue was thawing. So I'm glad to hear that technology has advanced. But here I am, 43, 20 years later, and about 5 years ago, my partner and I went to a reproductive clinic in San Francisco where we had a very horrible $200 hour or so with someone who PowerPointed, here's your statistics, 20% chance, $16,000, we reckon up five times. And it really shook us up and got us thinking. And I just want to say what I really chose. My primary goal is motherhood. And I can say happily, 5 years later, I have an adopted son.
Congratulations.
Who's 10 months old, sleeping like a baby right now, thank God, so I could listen and talk. But I just want to say, eggs and your own egg or a donor egg, like giving birth is such a one part of motherhood. And that I have been hands down thrilled, ecstatic, didn't have to go through any of the hormonal, emotional torment around will or won't these eggs work. I just wanted to put into the conversation to be a mother.
Thanks for doing that, Elizabeth in Oakland. Yeah. And Dr. Cedars, is this something you talk to people about how important is it to them that it's their own egg, and what do they want to risk for that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's a very important decision. And as the caller brought up, there are lots of ways to be a mother. There are lots of ways to have a family. And I think that one of the good things about all the options we have, including egg freezing, including egg donor, including adoption, including all of these options, is that women have options. And there isn't a way to do this. Some might argue that's a bad thing, but I think that that's a good thing because for a lot of women, being able to be a mother, being able to have a family is a very important part of life. And so to have options available for women, for couples, for patients, so that they can choose the best option for themselves, I think is critically important. And so we talk a lot about you know, if you just want to have a child, if you want to have build a family, if you adopt a child, if you use a donor egg, if it's your own egg, you will love that child just as much, and you will accomplish that goal. For some women, it is important to carry the pregnancy and have that experience. And then a donor egg, your own egg, is that same experience of carrying the baby and breastfeeding and et cetera. And for other women, having that genetic link is very important. And then, you know, egg freezing is potentially a new option to put into that category for women for whom that's an important piece of what being a mother means to them.
Dr. Seeders, do you think it is there's a real danger in this? I mean, there's a lot of money to be made in this industry. Uh-huh. These are vulnerable women scared about their future. Do you worry that everyone's having that conversation, that fertility doctors, are they having these conversations that you're talking about with their patients? Is there a concern that maybe this is an industry that full of good publicity and PR could hype itself up and have more people entering into egg freezing than should?
Well, I think that was one of the reasons that the American Society of Reproductive Medicine took a very cautious approach in terms of removing the experimental label from egg freezing. As I said, we and others have been doing this for a number of years with patients who had cancer, because for those women, that was their only option. We knew they would lose fertility if they went through their cancer treatment.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of the hour, but thank you so much. We were joined by Sarah Elizabeth Richards, journalist and author of Motherhood Rescheduled, Diane Tober, medical anthropologist and associate director of the Center for Genetics and Society in Berkeley, and Dr. Marcel Seeders, professor and director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility at UCSF. Thank you all so much for being part of the show. Forum's produced by Irene Noguchi and Tina Larberg. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online help from David Marks. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer, Danny Bringer. I'm Judy Campbell, today in for Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.